Blog Talk Radio.
Happy to be here tonight, even though it's a sober day. This is September 11th, 2011, and we have a special 9/11 show. And usually we try not to celebrate the things that have happened to us as far as tragedies. We try to celebrate how we overcome. But in light of all of negativity, I think we have a very positive young lady on the line. She is a quilter. Denise, are you on the line with us tonight?
Yes, I am, Mrs. Giz.
Great. You can call me Leslie.
Okay.
We met a few days ago over the telephone. I read about you in the New York newspapers. Could you tell the audience more about that article and who you are?
Sure. Well, first of all, my name is Denise E. Allen, and I am a folk artist who lives upstate New York in Palatine Bridge among the old order Amish. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and lived in Brooklyn for, 25, 26 years until I moved out of Brooklyn into Long Island, New York. And that was when I started to learn how to do embroidery art and started to just do embroidery, and I just started loving it so much until I decided I wanted to become an embroidery art designer. And that's what took me into starting my art career. It actually started with embroidery, but I lived in Long Island, New York, my husband and I, for 27, 28 years until we left there and moved up here in Palatine Bridge. Before I started to dabble in embroidery art, and the reason why I even got started doing an embroidery was as a result of my mother. Her name was Bernice Elaine Butler. She had, she was a self-taught seamstress, and she also did embroidery. She loved to do embroidery work, and she also made dolls, but she didn't make dolls like I do. She made dolls from patterns, and she also did quilting, but I wasn't interested in knowing how to do sewing and needlework or anything like that. When she was alive, I was working. Excuse me?
Can I just ask you a question about your mom?
Sure.
And your relationship with your mom? Did she do these dolls right there in your home? And did
yes.
she do it for the community? You know, tell us a little bit about what the house looked like in her special room and, you know,
okay.
how she was received.
Oh, okay. We lived in Brooklyn on Dean Street. And Dean Street is all brownstones. So we lived in a brownstone, like a 4 or 5 story brownstone. And so we all had like our own little rooms. And my mother sewed down in her room. Her room was down in the lower level. We had first floor, second floor, third floor, the basement, the parlor floor, I'm sorry, and then the basement. So she lived in the lower level, not the basement, and that's where she did her sewing and her needlework and her in a room there. And so I used to, not just me, because there were 9 children, 7 girls, 2 boys, and so we used to see our mother sewing beautiful clothes all the time and making quilts. I never saw her dolls, actually, until she died. Then we discovered dolls that she made. Yeah.
How did that come about? I'm just curious. You know, how did you discover these dolls? You were just in the attic in the basement?
When she passed away, you know, my sisters went through everything and, you know, to pack things away, to give things away, and that's where we discovered her embroidery pieces and her handmade dolls. But I never actually saw my mother make dolls, but she did. And we found them after, her passing.
And where are they now, the dolls?
That's a good question. I don't have them. Maybe some of my other sisters have them.
Well, I hope you and your sisters take pictures of them and, you know, frame them and, you know, keep them around in the family. So that's a wonderful
mm-hmm.
story. Now, when she was sewing, did the clients, the people who wore these dresses that she was making, did they come to your home?
Well, my mother didn't sew for other people. She sewed for herself, and she sewed clothes for us when we were young. So she didn't have a business where she was a seamstress making clothes for other people, but she was a self-taught seamstress. And she did tell us this, that how she learned how to sew when she was living down south before she moved to New York was she used to like beautiful clothes, and she couldn't afford to buy patterns. So she learned how to draft her own patterns and design her own clothes. So she taught herself how to sew and make patterns and make her own beautiful clothes, and she did that until the day she died. Mm-hmm.
And you still have the quilts, and that's where your influence came from with the quilts.
Well, actually, no. Because, like, what I was going to say was me seeing my mother do all of these beautiful things, among other things, just being, because she was a homemaker, just keeping the home up and, you know, keeping us dressed nice and pretty clothes. I mean, all of that's in my memory. But I wasn't interested in sewing or doing any kind of needlework. I was just like a typical young lady. I just, you know, like to be with my friends, and I wasn't interested in sewing and needlework and all of that stuff. I'd rather be with my friends. And then after I graduated high school, because I majored in beauty culture, I didn't major in sewing. I majored in beauty culture. I got my license to do to become a beautician. But after again my mother's death, that was when I started to get interested in needlework. But prior to that, I wasn't interested in sewing or needlework or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
And your first piece you remember? Can you tell
my first piece that I did was, again, my mother had passed. I got very, very depressed, and so depressed until I really wanted to, you know, commit suicide. I was suicidal, but what happened, I found myself walking around downtown Brooklyn on Fulton Street, and I walked in a Woolworth store, and I found myself in the needlework department, and I saw all of these beautiful needlework things like yarns, threads, embroidery kits, patterns, and it reminded me of my mother. And so the thing that attracted me the most was the embroidery. So I saw a lot of different kits, but the kit that I liked the most was a picture of Abraham Lincoln, the Liberty Bell, a quill pen, and the Constitution. It was a small kit, so I brought that. And I think I was 26. I brought it, and I took it home and took it out and started doing the embroidery. Even though I couldn't follow the instructions, I just did it to the best of my ability. And I was smitten. I was hooked. And then the needlework bug hit me. And then I began to realize, wow, my mother was doing this all of her life, and I didn't like it then, but now I'm 26, 27, and I love this stuff. So I started to, after I got hooked, I went out, and I started to look for embroidery kits different places. I started at Woolworths, and then I started to go to other needlework shops and started to buy all these different kind of embroidery kits. And then I decided I wanted to make my own patterns and my own pictures on cloth and do my own stitches. So, again, I wanted to make African-American folk art embroidery designs because there weren't any out there at that time. And so that's when I taught myself how to draw. And I started drawing on fabric, different types of fabric, not just cotton and linen.
Did you ever discover that talent about drawing? Or where did that come from that you just said, okay, I want to draw?
That's right. And
like
I couldn't draw a lick. That's right. I couldn't draw a lick. My husband, he's an artist. He's not a trained artist, but he's good. He loved art when he was in high school, and he was just a gifted person to do art. So even though he didn't have any training, he knew how to do art, and he did it very, very well, so much to the point where when he was in school, his science teacher saw his work and said that he wanted my husband to draw the pictures for a book that he was publishing, a science book. And they gave him credit for it. So he's got a book that his artwork is in from the time he was a teenager. So at any rate, because I wanted to draw my own images and I couldn't, I asked my husband to draw them for me, and I told him what kind of images that I wanted. I wanted rural scenes of African-American farm families and, you know, old barns and things like that. And so he started drawing them for me on the fabrics that I would get, but they looked too perfect. So I told him that that's not working. I don't want it looking like this. I want it to look more grandma, Moses type. And so he said, well, then why don't you just keep drawing it? Because I'm not going to do it. I got to do it the way I do it. So I taught myself how to draw. And that's what happened.
So no formal training at all?
None, no.
Not even like an after school, you know how to have to.
Nothing.
The workshops, you just said, I'm going to do it.
I was determined. And then I found out later. Then I found out, actually not too long ago, within the last 2 years, that my grandmother was an artist. And I didn't even know that. So it must be in my genes somewhere. I'm not saying that I'm a great artist or anything like that, but a lot of people like my work, and it's taken me places where I never dreamed I would go.
Your papers, right? So you must be very good if you made it to the Daily News, right?
Well, I've been written up in the Chicago Tribune. I've been written up in Art and Antiques magazine, the New York Times several times. I've been written up in the Daily News quite a lot, the Leader Herald, the Amsterdam News. I've been written up in so many newspapers, I can't count them. Yeah.
Wow.
And even the White House.
The White House?
Sure. Yeah. The White House called me a few years ago and invited me to come to their 40th anniversary Art and Embassies program because of my artwork.
All right, let's just take a journey back a little bit. When you first started, in your first exhibit that you brought your work to, tell us the demographics and what this was all about, you know, and I want to compare it to where you are today and the demographics.
Okay. Well, the first museum exhibition that I ever participated in was when I was in Brooklyn. Because, again, after I started doing my own embroidery on fabric, I got this idea, wow, you know, I want to make these embroidery designs into quilts. So I got this idea, well, just make up these images and embroider them and then cut them out in patchwork squares, sew them together and make like a an embroidery quilt. But then add more to it. Like, I didn't just want to put embroidery stitches on there. I wanted to add other things on there, embellishments like paper, cardboard, wire, because that's the way my mind thinks. I wasn't copying anybody, so I just started to embellish the embroidery designs and then make them into quilts. So that's how I started doing these three-dimensional story quilts. So anyway, but before I started to do that, I was just doing the embroideries, and then I started doing simple patchwork quilts. And the first museum exhibition that I did was in a Brooklyn museum, but it's no longer there. But it's called the New Muse. It was in Brooklyn. I think it was on Bedford Avenue, and that was the first museum exhibition that I had ever done. And I forgot how I found out about it, but I did, and they told me to bring a quilt in that I made, and I brought it in, and they hung it with some other African-American women quilters. Faith Rheingold was one of the quilters, and there were some other quilters in there, and that was my first museum exhibition. Yeah.
And today?
And that was back in the excuse me?
Yeah, you were saying that was back in
the early 80s.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you, was it much competition, or, you know, when you were going out, when you first started, where there's, I know you said there wasn't too many Afrocentric type of quilts, and who was really receiving your quilts and your work and wanting to display
it's very interesting about what happened with my work, because, I mean, from that time up until, the present time, I've met a lot of not just quilters, but women that do needlework, women painters, and all kind of people. And one of the things that they say, we can't believe how so many of these interesting places you wind up getting your work in, because usually some of the places that I've had my work shown in, they say, well, how did you get in there? Well, you know, it's amazing, but I've never tried to really pursue a lot of these places. There are some places that I have tried to pursue, but a lot of times people saw my work and somebody called somebody up and they called me up, and, you know, that's how I got in some of these places. I didn't submit a resume or anything like that. It's just, I feel like God just
word
opened the doors for me. Yeah.
Right.
It's like I just do the work, people see it, and then they tell somebody else, and that's how I've gotten some of these places. A very interesting story I can tell you was this was back when I was living in Long Island. A dear friend of mine, he's an elderly gentleman, but he liked to read the business news and the Wall Street Journal and New York Times and all of these different business papers. And one day he saw this article about this organization. It's the State Department has a program called Artists in Embassies. And he read an article about Walt Disney, who had his work in the China embassy in China, and how the Chinese people had received his work. At first, the State Department thought that they would have a negative response from the Chinese, but then they found out that Chinese people really liked Walt Disney's work at this embassy. Well, fast forward, he had told me, he said, if you need to contact this organization and ask them would they like to have your work in the embassy. I told him, Mr. Renner, it doesn't go like that. You just don't call the State Department and tell them about your work. I mean, yes, I could, you know, send a resume and information, but I doubt seriously if they would be interested in my work. So he said, no, you should just try it. Well, I didn't. But then one day, out of the clear blue sky, who emailed me but the State Department? And they told me that an ambassador's wife had saw some of my work on an art card at a show that I had did in New York, and they wanted to know that I still have that art piece, and I told them that I did. So they asked me, could they borrow it? And I told them yes. And so the piece that they wanted to borrow was a three-dimensional folk art story wall hanging. It's not a quilt. It's a large piece of fabric that's painted. It has applique on it, and it's embellished with a lot of different things: paper, wood, wire, plastic, a lot of different things, metal. So they borrowed it, and then after they borrowed it, I had called. They didn't invite me to the reception. The embassy that it hung in was in the embassy in Senegal, the Dakar Senegal. So when I didn't get an invitation to the reception, I called them up and I asked them, could I come to the reception? They told me no. And I was wondering, gee, wait a minute. Usually when you have somebody borrow your work, they usually invite you to the reception. And I later found out they didn't invite me because it was a special reception that was just for the President of the United States and his staff. At that time, the President was doing a tour of three African nations, and the Dakar Senegal was one. So they asked me for my piece for that embassy for the President of the United States visit. So they called me back and they said, Miss Allen, we couldn't invite you to reception, but because we appreciate you letting us borrow your work, we would like to send you to Senegal to do programming for the government for 1 week, and then we'd also like to send you to Paris, France. So.
Awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. And I'm just curious, who was the president at the time?
President Bush.
Okay. Uh-huh. Oh, okay. That was a great consolation prize, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was very good. And then the other thing was, I said, wow, you know, sometimes we have our moment in the sun, you know, your 15 minutes of fame. So I figured, well, the ambassador's wife liked the work, and maybe the State Department didn't necessarily like it, but because her husband is an ambassador and he's been ambassador with the U.S. government for many years, she has a lot of clout, so if she wanted it, they would get it. But then later on I found out that they did really like my work, and since then they've been using my artwork to go in other embassies. They asked me to borrow some work to go in their Russian embassy. And then they also contacted me, and they said they wanted to buy one of my art pieces for the embassy in Nepal. And then I got a call from the embassy in Vienna, Austria, and they said they wanted to use one of my images for a diplomatic art diary that they used as an official gift for the U.S. State Department, just for ambassadors and host country nationals.
Do you have a book?
Mm-hmm.
Because many of us, like myself, can't go all over the world to see your
uh-huh.
work. Is there uh-huh. a book that you're documenting your work on site at these different locations? I love pictures. I have slideshows
okay.
on Photo Bucket, One True Media.
Right.
On Facebook,
uh-huh.
and I
right.
was, of course I want to put your pictures up on my website. Now, is there mm-hmm. a book that you're going to compose or put together with these great
well,
stories?
I got some of my work up on my website, but I don't have a book. I mean, I got some of my work in, let's see, just a simple book like Apple for the Teacher, and then Crafting a Business has some images of my work. Raw Vision magazine, it's outside of art and folk art magazine. They have images of my work. But me, myself, I don't have a book documenting all my art history. And that's my next project. I'm just looking for somebody that's willing to do it.
Oh, well, we're going to put that out there right now in more ways
yes.
than one. Let's put your contact information. We will not hesitate.
Thank you.
Tell the audience what you want.
Okay, audience out there, hello. Well, is there a person out there that would be interested in telling my life story in a book? Because it's book worthy, trust me, because it's a very unusual, interesting story. I mean, I did not want to be an artist. I did not plan to be an artist. And as smart and handsome and wonderful as my husband is, he's there looking at me blushing, but it's true. He wanted to be an artist. He said, oh, I didn't feel I was good enough, and, you know, but that's not true. He just wound up being an artist for the Port Authority. He worked for them for 33 years as their senior draftsman. But when he first saw my work, he said, Denise, you'll never make it as an artist. But I didn't pay him any mind because I know that he loves me and he wasn't trying to hurt my feelings, but he likes fine art. But so many amazing things have happened to me since I started doing this needlework art. I really, in all seriousness, do plan on putting out a book because it's an amazing story, what happened to me with this art. I mean, it's really unbelievable, mind-boggling. I could have never planned none of this stuff out. Even the current article that Mr. Ruiz wrote, Mr. Ruiz and I lived in the same building for over 27 years when I lived in Queens, and all the time that he lived there, I didn't know that he was a writer. And he knew my son very well, and he loved my son. Everybody loved my son. One day when I had a show at the Hudson River Museum, it was a one-woman art show. I don't even know how the Daily News came there to write up the story about that event. But that's when I found out that he was a writer. I didn't even know that he was a writer. So since that time, that was back in 1996 or 97 when he wrote the first article in the Daily News. It was a larger article than the one that they have in there now. He and I spoke about a month ago, and he agreed to do an article about my 911 story quilt because, again, it is about my son's death in the 911 towers because my son worked there. And my son always used to say, Ma, you need to write a book. And, I mean, this is back in the 90s because I've had a lot of, like I said, wonderful things happen to me since, starting a career as a needlework artist. Yeah, and then the stories are very unique. I don't just tell, like, fairy tale stories. I tell stories about African-American life going back from the 18th century up until the early 1900s. I don't go modern because I don't like to tell modern stories. I like to tell stories about what happened to our forebears, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because some of, as we know, a lot of our forebears never got a chance to tell their own stories. So I tell their stories to the best of my ability, and I use needlework to tell their stories. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And I was going to ask you, when you first mentioned your Woolworth, kit.
Huh?
And I wanted to ask you, what drew you, out of all the kits you could have picked, what in your background in the way that you were raised made you pick and select the Civil War era?
Correct. That's a good question. Thank you. Because I'm really an old soul. I mean, really. I mean, imagine this. I'm an African-American woman, and I live smack dab in the middle of the old order Amish that lived the way people lived going back to the late 1700s. I mean, really, this is where I live. And this is where I wanted to live. That's another miracle story.
And you're very comfortable.
You kidding? I'm more than comfortable. I mean, I'm chilling like, you know, I don't know how to speak like these young people, but I'm really chilling up here. I love it. And the thing about it, they love me too. My neighbors really literally love me. My Amish neighbors love me. I got the love letters to prove it. Can you imagine?
I was
going to
ask, how did you convince your husband coming out of Brooklyn?
Well, I can convince my husband of anything.
You know, how did you find the town? Were you driving through? Did you have a show in that area?
No. Again, I'm looking for a book writer out there to write my book. He'll make loads of money if he write it, because really it's true what I'm telling. I'm kind of like teasing and joking, but it's really true. I was looking for before my son died. This is another interesting story. My son died. I told him, and he already knew. I like old-fashioned life. I don't want to live in the city no more. I want to live, if I could, among the Shakers. Okay, but the Shakers are dead. They didn't believe in being intimate, okay, with that religion. So nobody's around because they couldn't do nothing. So I said, since I can't live among the Shakers, I got to live among the Amish. And that would never happen. I mean, it's just a wish. But at any rate, I used to tell my son that all the time. So one day my son was in Manhattan at the farmer's market. He came home and he gave me this yellow slip, and it said an Amish farm. He said, Ma, the Amish is in town, and you got to go there and get your vegetables and your fruits and everything. And he said, here's the address. And it was a yellow slip, and it said an Amish farm. Well, also after that, I was looking for coming upstate, looking at property. I went down south, looked at property in rural communities, and you know, I told my husband, we got to get out of here. But he was still working, and I said, well, if we do get a property, you stay in New York, I'll stay up on the farm, and then when you retire, you come up here. But I saw a farm that I really, really loved, but then the deal fell through. Okay, so 911 happened, and after 911 happened, I got a phone call out of the clear blue sky from a gentleman that lived across the street from where I live. This is his summer home. He doesn't stay here. But he said, I was on my roof. Someone drove up and said, I heard you know somebody that's looking for a farm. Do you know if she's still looking? He said, I don't know. I'll call her. He called me. He called my husband. He told us there was a property available. We came up. My husband said, let's take it. And that's how I got up here. I did
and
not look for this place.
You're the only African-American farming.
No. I'm the only African-American, yes, in this little hamlet. No, except for my neighbor across the street. He's African-American also. He lived up here, I think, 15 years before I moved up here. I live on it's like almost 23 acres, and I think his is close to 18 or 19 acres. So it's just two of us in this hamlet, yes. And it's a very small hamlet. It's not a village. It's not a town. It's a hamlet. That's how tiny it is. Yeah. And my Amish neighbors and
I've heard of the term hamlet, but I really don't know what a hamlet is.
Well, it's like a little tiny area. It's like it's not even a town. It's not big enough to be called a town or a village. It's just
no
a small
office.
Little.
You don't have
no post office. No. I got to drive out of this area to go to the post office. No grocery store.
How close is your next neighbor, your nearest neighbor?
My neighbor is down the road a piece. I got a neighbor that lives across from me, but he lives way across from me. And right on my right, on my right is nothing but woods. And then on my left, it's a big open field where my Amish neighbor's cows graze. It's about 40 open acres. And it's very peaceful up here. If I wanted to walk around, like not dressed, I could. Can't nobody see me.
Now, even though you only have maybe a handful of neighbors, What do they think mm-hmm. about your work? And do you share it with them?
They love it. They love it. And this is the thing. It's just so amazing. And my Amish neighbor, her name is Katie, and she's my friend that I love. And she always tells me, and, you know, but she's not telling the truth. She says, Denise, I can't do what you do. Now, she's a midwife. She made even some of my beautiful Amish clothes because I dress like an Amish sometimes.
Okay.
She makes, like, bakes bread for me, like wheat bread with raisin. They make preserves for me. And, like, I go over there and I spend time with them. They give me vegetables and they bake pies and they leave them over here. And when I went away a few months ago, I took a short mini vacation. When I came back, they had made me a patchwork quilt because they said they love me and miss me and don't go away. And
so
I can really tell you, I can cry. Huh?
That's an incredible story. But how do you sustain yourself? You know, do you if everything is so far away, there's no whole food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of diet are you living off of? And
we living off the land. We living
off
the land.
You have the fireplace and the whole nine. You have cows.
Well, I got a wood burning stove in my general store and a wood burning stove in my little slave kitchen attached to my general store. And then upstairs, I got a, it looks like a wood stove, but actually it's a modern stove. You just press a button and the fire comes on. But in then we got a trailer. So we live in a trailer. It was here when we got here. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's a small three-bedroom trailer. And then we had a house built further back in the woods. But that's electric. So if we decide, we don't want to stay in an area where it's lights, we just go in the general store or in the slave kitchen. It's big.
What
and
kind
it's
of
unique.
Container?
I call it a slave kitchen because
okay.
it, when you go in there, and it looks like a kitchen that a slave might have lived in the 18th century.
Okay.
And I designed it.
Wow. You really are living out your dreams, and I guess you had envisioned this since you were a kid. I guess you liked the show Little House on the Prairie.
I did.
Yeah,
because, I mean, some of the stories are up, like, online. If you Google my name, Denise Allen, folk artist, some of these stories you can read online. It's really true. I mean, when, like you said, why did I pick that kit out of all of the things that was in there? Because I believe what I wrote in my artist statement and my artist bio, because I do have dreams, not as much as I used to, about the kind of life I'm living. I did when I was little anyway, you know what I mean? That I wanted to live like people did back in the 18th, late 17th, 18th century. This is what I wanted.
And why. And you never could understand.
Well, I believe God gave me those dreams and visions. I didn't put them in my mind. And you know, nothing bad put them in my mind. I believe that God put those dreams and visions in my mind. And also my genetic code, because my mother was from the South, and my father was born in the 18th century. My father wasn't born in the 19th century. My father was born in the late 18th century.
Well, okay.
And so I got some really old genes in me. And my parents were so great. I mean, these were great parents that I had. So it's my genetic pool. Yeah, it's my genetic pool. And it's a gift also that God put in me. And I'm living out my dream and my visions. And it's true. It's really true.
I can see it. I can see it from just listening to you. Now, as far as you saying you being an old soul, and I have
mm-hmm.
a lot in common. I can relate to what you're saying. I also live in a rural area, and
okay.
everyone thinks I'm out of my mind too. But
okay.
when you said your father, he was born 18th century, right?
1890.
Now,
were
your
aunt,
okay,
mm-hmm.
your aunts and were you always around his generation? Did you find yourself enjoying
no.
their company? No.
Well, okay, let me not say no. I'm sorry. I was around my father more than I was around my mother. My father was an entrepreneur. He was a land owner. When my father moved up, because he wasn't from here, he was. My father was born in the Virgin Islands. So my mother was born in the Salisbury, South Carolina, and my father was born in the Virgin Islands, St. Croix, Virgin Islands. And I was loved my mother. My mother was so beautiful and wonderful and smart and good and perfect as far as I was concerned, and God knows it's the truth. But my father, I loved being around my father. My father was very quiet. You really couldn't hardly get two words out of him. But he was very smart. He came here to the United States in the 1940s, and when he came, his father was very wealthy. He came with a lot of money, and he brought four brownstones. I'm sorry, five. I thought it was four, but it was actually five. He brought two in Brooklyn, one in the Bronx. No, I think he brought three in Brooklyn, one in the Bronx, and one in Harlem. And the one that he brought in Harlem was right next door to Marian Anderson, the opera singer. And I used to talk to her when I was a little girl, and I didn't know she was who she was then. But that was one of the neighbors, one of his neighbors. Mm-hmm.
Now, did you memorialize her in your quilt, in one of your artwork?
Not yet. No.
Not yet?
I memorialize mostly African-American slave women and women that have just come out of slavery. Those are the women that I memorialize in my story quilts.
Okay, and last question before we let you leave us with your contact information.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the Circle of Sisters? At the
no, ma'am.
Javits? Okay.
No, I'm not.
I was a vendor last year, and I did very
okay.
well. I have a book, and we'll talk about that off the air later. But I was there, and I highly recommend it. It's October 8th of this year, next month. So it may be
uh-huh.
too late for you to get involved, but I
okay.
hope that you'll be there next year because the women are hungry, just like our children are. But I found that
right.
the attendees are extremely hungry and starving for what you're doing. And I commend you, and I want to do more work with you on different levels. And I can see
mm-hmm.
us working together on several different venues. So I just want to thank you. This is one of the most fascinating shows I've had, and I very rarely interview my guests, but I'm so glad I talked to you. I just want to thank you again publicly, and hopefully we can speak privately. But could you give your information to everyone?
Sure. My website is my name, which is Denise E. Allen, D. DeniseEAllen.com, and that's DeniseEAllen.com. On there is images of my work, my telephone number, my store and gallery hours, and I look forward to people emailing me and asking me questions and, you know, anything that I could do to encourage somebody or to help somebody in their endeavors, or whether they're art or otherwise, I try to do the very best I can to help. Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said, I enjoyed talking to you. I think you're fascinating, and we look forward to talking to you again at the Gist of Freedom.
Thank you, and thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, and good night, and tell your husband he's a fabulous helpmate.
Thank you. I will.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.